then I realize what they're doing. This night is only about them. This night is about what she wants and what Smith will give her. He's giving her me. Let's have a seat, Quinn, Smith says, walking over to the couch. He takes a seat. Quinn follows, looking a little confused. But he's a good sport, so he sits down. Smith unzips his trousers and pulls out his already fully erect cock. His eyes never leave Chella. Her eyes see no one else. He strokes himself, his fist wrapped tightly around his dick, and waits. Quinn looks at me and smiles. I look at Chella and smile as well. Smith has always liked to watch, and I'm happy to put on a little show for him. I walk around her, looking only at her body. She tries to turn with me, but I say, "Stand still, Chella. I'll tell you when I want you to move." Her hard swallow is audible in the silent room. Fear. She should feel a little fear about tonight. I'm willing to give her that opportunity. "I like this dress," I say. "It's very pretty." I finish my circle and stand in front of her. We are in profile to Smith and Quinn, so they can get a long look at what I'm going to do next. "But you know what I don't like about this dress, Marcella?" I say her name with disgust.
"What?"
she asks softly. I reach for the deeply plunging neckline, grab one side with each hand, and rip it open, exposing her bare breasts. Chella gasps, takes a step back, but I pull her forward and kiss her lips, both hands holding her face close to mine as I breathe heavy into her mouth. "I told you not to move," I whisper. She nods, looking me straight in the eyes, Smith temporarily forgotten as she deals with my demands. I don't like the fact that I wasn't the one who picked it out. I rip the rest of the dress, right down the middle of her stomach until the tear meets the long slit up her front and comes fully open. Little beads go flying everywhere, bouncing along the black marble floors until they roll out of sight. Chella gasps again, looking all around as her ruined little fantasy disappears. I laugh, like loud. "I don't know what you thought tonight would be like, Marcella, but this is how I like it, and since Smith was so kind and gave me control first, I'm going to make the most of it." I warned her on Christmas Eve that I was dangerous when it comes to domination, and I am. I need her to know that about me. I need to get that message through to her loud and clear. I take her hand and find it cold and trembling. She squeezes as I lead her across the room, yanking the rest of her dress off her body as she walks. It's left in a tattered puddle on the floor. I point to the arm of the couch where Smith and Quinn are sitting. Quinn is jerking off too now, his dick fully erect, his eyes pinned to Chella and me. Smith has not changed one bit. His hand still moves up and down his shaft, his gaze still on Chella. "Lie down," I tell Chella, "face first." She gives me a confused look, and I almost smile. But she doesn't get any smiles from me, not yet. We're not even close to the part where I smile with satisfaction. I push her forward until she falls on top of the couch arm, then kick her legs open. She still has her fuck-me heels on. They are pearly white, to match the beads on her ruined dress. And they scuff on the marble, leaving white marks on the dark floor. I position her body so her pussy is pressed into the black leather of the couch arm, and then press her head down so hard she has to turn it to the side and look at Quinn, who is sitting just a foot away. Smith is on the other side of Quinn, and he stands. For a moment, I think he's going to stop me. But I'm wrong. He walks over to a chair on the other side of the room and sits down. To get a better view, I realize. I ignore him. Just start rubbing Chella's upturned ass. She moans a little as I stroke her, my fingers slipping in between her legs to find her already wet. And then I bring my hand down so hard on her ass cheek, her head lifts up and she squeals. "Hold her head down," I tell Quinn. He does as I ask, but I don't think he holds her too hard. Just pets her mostly, whispering things in her ear. One hand still on his cock, the other rubbing the redness creeping over her pale skin. He looks at me, and I nod, so he takes his hand away, and I smack her again. She holds it in better this time, but a few whimpers escape her tightly pressed together lips. "Do you think I'm punishing you, Marcella?"
"No,"
she whimpers. "I'm not. You're right." I smack her again, and this time she takes it like a champ. So I keep going. Smack, 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 smack. On and on and on, so that there's no time for Quinn to ease her pain or tell her nice things or make her feel better. Her ass is so red by the time I stop, I can hold my hand 2 inches above her skin and feel the heat. I reach between her legs and check her again. Sopping wet. I stick 3 fingers inside her pussy and use a 4th to caress her clit. Whatever she was thinking a few moments ago during her spanking dissipates. She starts moaning and writhing, trying to rub her pussy on the couch arm. I look back at Smith. He's breathing hard as he jerks off, his eyelids half closed, the longing in his expression enough to urge me forward. I pull her up by her hair and throw her down on the ground. "Kneel," I say as I unbutton my pants and pull out my cock. I crook a finger at Quinn, telling him to stand. He knows what comes next, so he does as I ask. Chella is on the floor between us, but I yank on her hair again and spin her around so she's facing Smith. I crouch down and take Chella's face in both my hands, kissing her hard and rough. She is gasping for air, panting into my mouth. I take her hand and place it on Quinn's cock as I ease back. I want to see the look on her face. She asked me about this last week. Do I touch them? Yes, Marcella, I say softly. I touch them. I help her jerk Quinn off. He's got his eyes closed. Total ecstasy. I look at Smith, but he's already walking over to us, his hand reaching for Chella's as I stand up. He takes her hand and places it on my cock and helps her stroke me. Long, slow strokes. Just the way I like it. I close my eyes and sigh, letting go of Quinn. It has been a very long time since the three of us have had this together. And this might be the last. So I'm gonna enjoy it.
Chapter 36. Smith. Chella's eyes are already searching for mine by the time I crouch down in front of her. I'm already helping her with Brick, but I don't stop there. I help her with Quinn, too. I have to close my eyes and take a moment to stop the thrill from taking control. When I open them again, Chella and I are so close, I can't stop myself. I lean in and kiss her. It's slow and soft and so fucking sweet. "Is this what you wanted?" I ask, pulling away just enough to whisper the words in her mouth. "Yes," she whispers back. "Should we keep going?" I ask, still helping her jerk off my friends. "Yes," she moans. "Please, keep going. I need it, Smith." Her eyes are wide now, pleading with me to give her what she needs. "Then let's do it," I say, kissing her softly again. "Put them both in your mouth, Chella. Suck them. At the same time." Brick and Quinn both take 2 steps closer, giving her access. We are a little circle of lust and longing. In this giant room, we take up no more than 3 square feet. It's almost a waste. That's how little room we require to fulfill Marcella Walcott's fantasy. She grips their cocks and I let go, letting her wiggle into position. She watches me watch her as she brings their tips to her lips and licks. A sweep of her tongue for Brick. He grabs her hair and urges her on. A kiss for Quinn. He reaches for her large breast, squeezing, lifting it up and rubbing it against her chin as she closes her eyes and both cocks enter her mouth, the tips of their swollen heads disappearing for a moment before she backs off. I take control of her head and turn it towards Brick. She opens for him, takes him inside, her tongue pressing flat to accommodate his wide girth. I help her. I pump her head back and forth. I push her, urge her to take him deeper, push her face up to his pants until his entire cock disappears and she begins to gasp for breath. Still, I hold her. I hold her there until she calms down and accepts it. Accepts my control. As soon as she does that, I pull her head back, saliva spilling out of her mouth and dripping down her chin. She looks up at me, waiting for what comes next. I turn her head again. Quinn's cock is waiting. Long and curved. I make it disappear until Quinn reaches down and grabs his balls, pressing them up into her mouth, trying to force them inside. She chokes, tries to pull back, but all three of us hold her there until she gives up and breathes through her nose, accepting what we're giving her. Our eyes are locked together. Black makeup runs down her face, her hands press against Quinn's thighs, desperate for distance. "Do you trust me?" I ask. Chella nods and we all let go. She falls backwards, her hands reaching back to slap the cold, hard marble, and she sucks in long breaths of air. "Stand up," I say. Brick grabs her hair and pulls, not as hard as he usually would. He's being very gentle with her tonight. When he's really into the domination stuff, he's ruthless. This is him playing nice for my sake. "More?" I ask her. "Yes," she says, wiping her mouth. Quinn slaps her hand away and says, "Leave it. We like it wet, Chella." She looks at him, and I guarantee she will never see him the same again. I know how sweet Quinn can be when he's alone with them, but I'm also very familiar with how he likes the quad to go. Chella nods at him, then her eyes seek out mine. "Do you want them to fuck you?" I ask. "Right now. At the same time." She nods. "Speak," Brick says. "Yes," she says, looking at Brick for a panicked moment. "Yes." Quinn sits down on the couch, slapping his thigh. "Right here, Chella. Sit on my lap and face Brick." She inhales but immediately spreads her legs and begins to position herself on top of Quinn so she's facing Brick. He looks down at her like he wants to eat her for dessert. I ease in closer, my hand on her spread-open pussy. Rubbing, stroking it until she's looking at me, her mouth open in a little O shape. Nothing but moans and whimpers coming out. Brick pulls some lube out of his suit pocket and squeezes some onto the tips of his fingers. He pushes past my hand and spreads it all over her asshole. "You like it in the ass, right, Chella?" he asks. Chella is so consumed with what I'm doing to her pussy she doesn't answer. But Brick slaps her tit, making her gasp, and she finds his face like she's supposed to. "Answer me," he demands. "Yes," she squeaks out. "Good," Brick says, rubbing it all over her asshole. "Because Quinn is going to fuck it right now." I reach down and grab Quinn's cock. He leans back into the couch cushions, his arms tightly gripping her stomach. He's hard and thick, and that little curve in his shaft will drive her crazy once he's inside her. I press it against her asshole, Quinn's hips helping me position him. And then he thrusts. Chella screams. I let go of Quinn and lean over her body, my mouth finding her lips. I kiss her as Quinn continues on his own. She's breathing so hard she can't even kiss me back, but it doesn't matter. The only part that matters is that we love what's happening right now, so I keep kissing her. "You're beautiful, Chella," I say. "Relax. Let him take over. Let him take control and just enjoy it." It takes almost a minute of this for her to give in, but once she does, Quinn's cock slips right inside her asshole and she falls back onto his chest, gasping for more air than she can draw in at once. Brick's knees come down on the couch on either side of one of Quinn's thighs, and he starts playing with her tits, my hand on his cock as I rub it back and forth across her pussy to stimulate her clit. Her whole body clenches up, and clear, thin liquid begins to spray out. Brick says, "Holy fuck." And then he swats my hand away and places himself at her entrance, trying to get inside her, desperate to get inside her with Quinn. I back away until I get to the chair and sit down to enjoy the show. my hand busy on my own cock now. Chella comes as I watch. It took her seconds, but we are not even close to being done. And this will just be one of many orgasms she has tonight.
Chapter 37. Chella. I am writhing against them. Brick's hard chest covers me, pressing down on me as he moves his cock in and out of my pussy so slowly I want to beg him for more. Quinn is holding my stomach tight, his arms a ring, a promise, a claim on my body. It is a rhythm I've never experienced before. Slow at first. In. Out. In. Out. But then they speed up, my body rocking between them, sliding across Quinn's slick chest, hands tightly gripping Brick's strong arms. We are nothing but heaving, breathing, and moaning, and sweat. They take me like that, me positioned between them, tight in their hold. I am panting. Yes, yes, fuck me, fuck me. Like a whore in a porn film, like the slut I am. But I do not care about labels right now. I will gladly be their whore. I will gladly let them have me. I have no shame, none. I am nothing but want, nothing but longing. My eyes are tightly closed as I lose myself in a pleasure I have never known existed before.
Open your eyes and look at me, Brick commands.
I try, I really do, but it's an impossible request. I can't, I cannot, there is no way. A sharp slap across my face makes me think otherwise. Brick is staring down at me when I obey him, his face a mixture of agony and ecstasy.
Don't get lost, sweetie, he says gently. That's not how it ends.
How much more? I think it in my head, but it comes out of my mouth.
So much more, Smith says. He was across the room watching the last time I knew.
How much time just got away from me as I moaned and writhed in their pleasure? I almost panic at the thought, but Smith is right there, his mouth against mine, kissing me as Quinn and Brick continue to move in and out, to fill me up with every dirty fantasy I've ever had.
Stay here, he says. Stay here with us, Chella.
I do. I obey. I keep my eyes open and kiss Smith back. I wrap my hands around his neck and pull him so close we might become one person. Don't lose me, I murmur. My mind is going black with pleasure.
We won't, he says back.
Then Brick pulls out and kneels next to me on the couch. He drags my face away from Smith. And when he places his cock up to my lips, I'm so eager. I can't stop myself from sucking him. My hands leave Smith, but he's pulling away. I have a moment of panic, begin to reach out.
Shh,
Smith says. He's between my legs now, his face buried in my pussy as Quinn continues to make me crazy with his cock in my ass. Smith's fingers and tongue lapping against the soft skin between my legs. Brick pushing my face into his cock, pressing his balls up to my chin, so thick and hard. Quinn underneath me, holding me tight, making sure I don't get away, whispering in my ear, telling me I'm pretty. It goes on, and I'm losing time and myself and my place in the world. I am trying to forget and remember, but I have no shame left. I push it all away and just come all over Smith's mouth. He laps me up like he's so hungry, like he's starving and I'm the only nourishment he needs.
Is this what it takes?
Smith asks, pausing to look up at me from between my legs. I stop moving, but they never stop. Their hands are everywhere on my body, every place that feels good. What? I breathe.
This, Smith asks, is this what it takes to make you happy? Is this what you want in your box?
I am lost. I know it. I am losing myself in this game we're playing. The diamonds around my throat are choking me with lust. Everything is going black, and I don't care. I am gone. I am lost. I no longer exist. It's just me and my sickness. My disgusting sickness. The addiction I've been pushing away for so long overtakes me again, and I'm floating in ecstasy as I beg. I beg, and it fills me with shame. All the shame that should have prevented me from going through with this in the first place. And I don't care. I don't care. I just want more. I'm saying it, screaming it. More, more, more. I hear them talking to me, barking out commands. But I don't care. I just want to give in. Just one more time, I promise. Just one more time and I'll be good. I swear, I will. Just one more. Everything stops. The black recedes. No, I hear myself saying. I'm crying. I'm sobbing. No, 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 don't stop, please. A hard slap across my face makes me stop. Another and another. I begin to breathe again, sucking down air as so many hands take control of me. So many hands. On my face, more slaps. I am lifted up, carried somewhere. Don't stop, I sob. I swear I'll never do it again. I promise, just don't.
Chella.
Smith's loud shout finally reaches my ears. He's holding me, cradling me like a baby as I cry. I don't know how long I stay like that, but when I realize that I'm not really alone, that they are all still there, I open my eyes and whisper, I'm sorry. Quinn is the first face I see. He's leaning against me, petting my hair. His eyes are red and worried, like he's upset, and that just makes me want to cry more. I'm sorry, I say.
Shh, Quinn says. Just.
He takes in a deep breath and lets it out.
Just be still now, Chella. We're here. We've got you.
I look over and find Brick. He's got his hand up to his chin like he's thinking very hard about me. He gives me a weak smile and then sits down on the bed. I'm in a bed, I realize. Brick is touching my face, his cool fingers so good against my cheek.
Are you okay?
That's enough, Smith says. He's still holding me in his arms, his hard chest against my bare back. He pulls me even tighter and says it again.
That's enough. Leave us alone for a little bit.
We sit there in the dark, quiet. I breathe because that's the only thing I know how to do. Inhale, exhale. I want to go home, I finally say. I feel Smith nod underneath me, but then he stops.
No.
I really need to go home.
You are home, Chella.
I look around and realize they brought me to my own apartment at the club. I'm in my bed. There's the Capitol building outside my window. There's the snow that never seems to stop these days. There's the city that I didn't grow up in.
You know what I find odd?
Smith asks after a few minutes of silence. What? I ask.
You never had bad dreams with Quinn or Brick. At first, I thought it was me.
Smith,
shh, he says. Just listen. I thought it was me, that I scared you. But then that night we spent with Brick, you didn't have bad dreams then either. And I started to wonder about that. Wonder if your house was the reason you had the nightmares, the sleepwalking.
I don't sleepwalk.
You absolutely do, Chella. You walked out of the house once, twice actually, but I stopped you the first time before you got out the door. The second time you got all the way down the street. You were dressed, you had a coat, you had your purse, you were going somewhere. Where were you going?
I start to cry again.
I didn't tell Brick. I should have. We could have seen this coming, but I didn't want to think. I didn't want him to tell me that I might be the problem. I liked you too much to even consider giving you up.
Is that why you stayed away from me that one weekend?
Yeah,
He sighs. I thought it was me until we had that night with Brick. You were so sweet that night, Chella. So sweet to sleep with. Not the fucking. I don't care about the fucking. You cuddled up to me and wrapped your arms around me. He sighs again. And I realized it probably wasn't me. It was a relief and eye-opening, too, I guess. Because up until that moment, I swear to God, Marcella Walcott, I thought the world revolved around me. I smile, even though I feel so fucking ashamed of myself right now. And I know that most kids learn pretty early that they are not the center of the universe, but I always was. I had so many contradicting opinions thrown at me as a kid. Sometimes I was important because I was a billionaire's heir. Sometimes I was important because I was so defective. And it was so contradictory, you know? I turn in his arm so I can lay my head on his chest and see his face. It's too dark to see anything in his eyes, but a little glimmer of light from outside. I was everyone's whole world, good or bad. Love me or hate me, I was the problem. I was the center of all things happening in my life, until I met you. I close my eyes and let it happen. Let the darkness take me. Just give in. It wasn't a peak, was it, Chella? I shake my head and begin to cry. Shh, he says, smoothing my hair down. It wasn't a peak for you at all. It was a part of you. I'm sorry, Smith. I'm sorry I didn't tell you how fucked up I am. It's all right. I'm not mad. Not even close. But I do want to know what happened. Because, Chella, you are the center of my world now. I'm sorry, too. I'm sorry you're stuck with me, but you are. I'm kind of a dick when I don't get my way, and I like to be in control and call the shots. And there's no changing my mind once I've made it up. So you're stuck with me. I don't know what to say. I know you want an answer, but I'm not there yet. I have no answers. That's why I'm here. I'm doing my best to figure out what the fuck is wrong with me. Why us? He says. How could we possibly be your answer? We are three very fucked up men who share a girl like she's candy. We play with her emotions and pull her in every direction we can think of, until she goes crazy and leaves. He stops for a moment. I just really didn't think we were doing that with you. But I guess I was wrong. I'm the one who's sorry, Chella. I think we're the ones who fucked you up.
Chapter 38. Smith. You're not, she says. Then tell me what happened. You blacked out, Chella. You were talking crazy, screaming not to stop, yelling and making promises to be good. What the fuck was that all about? She's quiet. For a long time. I am just about to give in to sleep when she finally says something. My life was a secret like yours. Where did you go? And don't tell me some bullshit answer about church. She's quiet again, but then she takes in a deep breath and says, I've been seeing a doctor for 7 years. Why? I ask, sitting up in bed so she has to sit up too. I need to see her face for this. I can't miss a moment of it. She shakes her head. I'm sick. I grab her face and hold it tight. How? How are you sick? I'm broken. In the head, that's all, Smith. She tries to get up, but I grab her hand, more roughly than I intend, but I'm not letting her walk out now. You don't get to say that and leave, Chella. Fuck that. You're not leaving until you tell me what's happening to you. I'm sick, she says loudly. Okay, I'm sorry, but I don't owe you an explanation. The fuck you don't, I say. I love you, damn it. And if you're sick and need help, then I'm gonna make sure you get it and get better. You can't fix me, she yells. No one can fix me but me. She yanks her hand away, and this time I let her go. Tell me why you came here, I say as I watch her go into the closet and start getting dressed. To fuck you, Smith, she says, trying her best to be mean. I came to fuck you and your friends, okay? She pulls a pair of jeans on and then stops to look at me. Does that make it all better? Because that's the truth. I knew who you were. I knew what you guys did with Rochelle. She and I planned it. What? Quinn asks from the bedroom door. I had no idea they were still here, but they are. Brick is standing behind Quinn, shaking his head at me. Let her go, he mouths. Don't do this. Not now. I'm going to listen to him. I have every intention of listening to him. But Quinn... What the fuck did you and Rochelle plan, Chella? I think you owe me an answer. Chella is pulling on a sweater now. Why don't you ask Brick why she left? Remember when you told me you thought Smith paid her off? To get her to leave? What? It's my turn to be confused now. I never did that. I know, Chella says, slipping her feet into some shearling boots. I'm suddenly having a flashback to the first night we found her. Brick did. Quinn spins around. Is that true? Look. Answer me, asshole, Quinn yells. Did you tell her to leave? Did you pay her off? He didn't pay her off, Chella says. He gave her an ultimatum. What ultimatum? Quinn pushes Brick back with two hands to his chest. What did you fucking tell her? He told her to get an abortion, Chella says, grabbing her purse. That's what he told her. And then she pushes both of them out of the doorway and walks off. I jump out of bed and follow her down the hall. Brick follows me, silent. But Quinn follows both of us, asking about... Fuck, I can't even process it. I only care about where the fuck Chella is going. How do you know this? He's screaming by the time we all get out onto the hallway. How, Chella? You said you didn't know. I didn't. She whirls around, her long hair flying out in all directions. Until yesterday. We saw the same sex therapist, Quinn, and I went in for an appointment to tell her about our plans for last night, and she gave me an update on Rochelle because we were in therapy together, and she felt I needed to know before I... Chella stops talking, looking conflicted. Before I took this final step with you guys. So she told me why she left. She points at Brick. And he's why. She got pregnant, Quinn, and she went to Brick for advice because she didn't know whose baby it was, yours or his, and he told her to get an abortion. So there, you've got your answer. Now you have no excuse not to go find her. She punches the call button for the elevator, and it's just our luck that the fucking thing opens, waiting patiently, like it was in on her escape plan. I follow her in. Hell, all three of us follow her in. She's busy texting someone. Chella, I say, grabbing her by the shoulders. You're saying this because you don't want to tell me about yourself. This isn't about Rochelle. She punches the button for the first floor, and the doors begin to close. I don't owe you an explanation, she says. Game over, Smith. Game over. I look at Brick, who is frowning so hard I have a stab of pain in my chest for him. Did he really tell Rochelle to get an abortion? That pain turns to sickness in my stomach. Quinn is silent now, standing still, saying nothing. Dead look on his face as he considers what this means, as he comes to terms with the truth. Rochelle was pregnant. She had an abortion and she left because of... Not him, he realizes. We both look at Brick at the same time. The elevator doors open and Chella bolts. We follow her out, all three of us talking at once. Chella, Brick says, please stop. Let's just talk. Chella, Quinn tries at the same time. Who is your therapist? Chella! Chella, I say, stop. Talk to me. Tell me what's happening. Fuck you, she says, lashing out at all of us as she makes the stairs and starts hopping down them as fast as she can. Game over! She yells it so loud it echoes off the lobby ceiling. There is only a doorman and a valet here right now. It's almost dawn, the day just beginning. We follow her down the stairs, all three of us trying to chase her down, breaking that final rule we never thought we'd have to break. The valet has to step aside so Chella doesn't plow him over as she enters the revolving door and pushes. I get there just in time to slip in with her. Chella, I say, grabbing her shoulder. She turns on me, mouth an angry line. Don't touch me. We get outside and she stops, confused for a moment, maybe wondering if she's got her car here. She doesn't. I know this. Let me take you home, I say. But then Quinn and Brick are outside with us. We are all half-dressed in tuxedos. I don't even have shoes on, and everyone on the street is looking at us like we are some kind of massive train wreck. Chella notices the attention the same time I do, and stops to take a deep breath. She turns to me, smiling. "I do not want to be part of a public scene," she says sweetly. "Never again. Give me this one last consideration, at least." Quinn and Brick stop next to me. We are nothing but questions and guilt.
"Marcella?"
A deep, stern voice calls from across the street.
"Oh, that's just fucking great," Chella says, throwing up her arms. "Have you been following me again? Just what the fuck?"
"Who the hell?" Quinn starts, but we all recognize him before Quinn can finish his sentence. Her father.
Chapter 39. Brick. "Shit," I mutter under my breath. "Let's go back inside." I grab Chella by the shoulder, but she turns on me.
"Don't,"
she seethes. "This is over, Brick. I'm not going back inside. I'm not talking to any of you ever again, and I'm not..."
"Marcella,"
Senator Walcott says, grabbing her by the arm and spinning her around. "Why are you following me again?" she asks, her voice high and loud. "You got what you wanted, right? You got your brand spanking new family, shiny new baby on the way, wife younger than me."
"I hate you,"
she screams.
"I hate you so much."
And then she starts sobbing uncontrollably. I look at Smith, and he's dying right now, right before my eyes. I look at Quinn, and he's already dead. "He didn't stop her," Chella says, pulling on my suit coat. "Do you hear me, Brick? He never stopped her."
"Marcella," the senator says, "get in the car." We all look at the long black car across the street. "We can discuss this in private."
But Chella is still tugging on my coat, looking up at me with her big blue eyes, begging me to listen. "He let her take me all over the world, Brick, all over to these awful places."
"Why, Chella?" I ask. "What happened?"
"Marcella," her father roars. "I said..."
"You shut the fuck up," Smith interjects.
"Right now. Just shut the fuck up."
"You don't even know her," the senator barks back at Smith. "You have no idea who she really is."
"Well, I've only known her a month," Smith spits through his teeth. "What's your fucking excuse?"
"Do you know how it ended?" Chella asks me, pulling me back to her. She is tugging on my suit coat so hard I have to bend down. But then she whirls and looks at her father.
"They came for me," she sobs. "She brought them to me. They had a knife and they held me down. They said..."
"Chella," I say, taking her in my arms, "what's going on? What happened to you?"
"They were going to cut me, Brick. Cut me here," she sobs, pointing between her legs. "We were in Sudan for a mission with the church, and I got a boyfriend when I was 17, but I had already lived through hell. My mother used to tie my hands to my bed when I was a kid so I couldn't touch myself. She called me a whore when I was 9. When I was 10, she started taking me on missions, all over the world, to try to control me. She told me I was dirty, and if she caught me doing anything even remotely sexual, like climbing a fucking tree..." She screams this at her father. "She'd tie me up."
"Jesus fucking Christ," Smith says, rubbing her arm. Even Quinn is back, holding on to Chella's shoulder.
"When I was just a little girl, she used to put splints on my arm so I couldn't reach between my legs. And that day in Sudan, she gathered up all the old women and they came for me. She begged them, Brick. She told them I needed to be saved and only they could do it. They held me down, Brick. They were going to mutilate me."
She whirls around to face her father again.
"And do you want to know how I escaped that fate?"
She spits on him, right in his face.
"That boyfriend went and got his father and uncles, and they had to threaten them. They told those old women I was the president's daughter, and if they touched me, the whole village would be bombed in retaliation."
She turns back to me, sobbing so hard I can barely understand her words.
"They took me to the U.S. Embassy, and I got sent home, and then I ran away."
But she can't take it anymore.
She crumples, Smith catching her in his arms as she buckles over. I swallow hard and look at her father. You need to leave, right now.
I hope you die,
Chella mumbles. She pushes Smith off her and stands to look at her father. I want you to feel the way I feel. I want you to be held down and... A horn honks as a silver BMW pulls up alongside us. Get in, Chella, a woman says. The passenger side window is down. Chella looks at the car, then starts crying again as she runs for the curb, throws the door open, and gets in. We watch in silence as she is driven away. And then we turn back to deal with the senator, but he's already making for his car. Maybe to follow her? Maybe to escape the truth he was just handed by his very broken daughter? No one cares. Why the fuck, Smith says, did Lucinda Chatwell just drive up and take Chella away? Because Lucinda is Chella's sex therapist, I sigh, just now putting all the pieces together. She and Rochelle were seeing the same therapist. That's how all this happened. You knew about this, Quinn says, his anger back. Just like you knew why Rochelle left. I didn't, I say, pinching the bridge of my nose as I walk back towards the club. I didn't know any of that, and I didn't know that she got an abortion, Quinn. I was just giving her options. Options, Quinn seethes. And you decided I didn't get to know about it? That was one of the options? I didn't know, I say, but I should have.
Chapter 40. Chella. How are you feeling now, Chella? Dr. Chatwell asks me. I'm lying on her couch in her office. The lights are dim and the curtains are closed to keep the sunlight out. She gave me a light sedative. To help me cope, she explained. Very stupid, I answer honestly. Why? Because you warned me. She did, too. She told me it would be a very messy exit, and I don't think they come any messier than that. And I refused to believe you. I thought I could handle it. Did something bad happen last night? She asks in her calm voice. Not at first. At first it was... I sigh, thinking about it. Wonderful. Just how I thought it would be.
Just like the fantasy you imagined?
Yes. And where did things start to go wrong? I blacked out, I think, near the end. Why? It felt good.
That's it? She asks.
It was perfect and wonderful, and it just felt... It felt...
It made you feel something?
She offers. Yes. What did it make you feel, Chella? Happy, I say, trying not to cry.
And why do you think that you blacked out at that point?
Because feeling good about sex is wrong.
But we know that's not true, right?
I nod, drawing in a deep breath. It's the shame my mother made me feel about it all growing up. It's natural, and if consenting adults agree, it's normal, no matter how they like it. She's silent, but I know her well enough to understand she's nodding her head at me. After 7 years of being on her couch, trying to work all this shame out of my fucked up mind, I know her just as well as she knows me, and we've been over this a million times. I am consumed with shame. My mother put it in my head for over a decade. She subjected me to relentless ostracizing and punishments. My father refused to stop her. And yes, it's all their fault, but I'm the only one who can make it go away. I don't think Smith or Quinn or Brick are the problem here, do you?
No, I admit. They're not. I am.
Do you remember the session we had just before Rochelle left?
We taped it.
Yes, and we promised each other that we'd watch it together when things got bad, to understand why the two of you made these decisions.
But Rochelle's gone.
We don't need Rochelle to work on you, Chella. Do you want to watch it, so you can get some perspective? Remember why you wanted to play that game to begin with?
I'm silent. I don't know if I want to see that tape. I don't know if I can handle it. I was so sure I was cured. Even though I knew then, and I know now, I don't have a disease. I can't be cured because there is nothing wrong with me. It's all in my head. My mother's voice, her disapproving looks and comments, her... We don't have to, she says in her conciliatory tone. But you were excited, remember? I nod, my eyes trying to close tighter. You were ready, and it was Rochelle who was crying that day, remember? I know why now, I sob. Why, Chella? Because they're really good guys. She didn't want to leave them, not even Smith. She wanted things to be different, and she didn't know how to do that, so she had to leave to figure it out. I stopped to breathe for a few moments. I'm sorry. I didn't realize. Didn't realize what? She prods. I just didn't expect to like them. You thought it would be easy? And you developed no feelings for them? Yes, I say, barely a whisper. I like them too, but we need to move on now and decide what you're going to do. About what? I ask, opening my eyes. Well, she says, you told me you had two things left on your checklist that were needed to help yourself heal. From the past. You wanted to confront your father, which you did. Very nicely, Brick tells me. You talked to Brick? He's in the waiting room right now. But let's concentrate on you for a moment more. You confronted your father with who you are and what happened to you, what your mother did to you. How do you feel now? Do you wish you hadn't done that? No, I smile. Are you proud of yourself? Yes, I say, sitting up. My head is pounding, so I massage my temples with my fingertips. I wish I could say it all again, only this time not cry. I think the crying made it more effective, because it was you showing him how badly you were hurting. True, I concede. And you needed to live that final sexual fantasy that you said, and I quote, makes me feel dirty. Do you think it was dirty, Chella? No, I say, lifting my head to look her in the eyes. I don't. Not at all. It was nice. Do you want to do it again? I shake my head. No. It's not dirty, but it's very confusing. She smiles at me. I would agree. You know, I had a meeting with Brick the other day to tell him Clark and I were withdrawing our membership. We're ready to move on as well. In fact, we're leaving for Europe next month. We're going to spend 6 months just traveling and having fun. You bitch, I say. What will I do without you? I laugh, but I'm really not kidding. She's been my rock for 7 years. Lucinda just smiles at me. You're done, Chella. You set out to heal yourself, and now you've done that. But that was a catastrophe, Lucinda. It was a disaster. In public, for fuck's sake. Do you think these things end with a whimper? But my longing, I say, it's still there. She laughs at me. Who do you long for? Who? It's the dirty sex I long for. You know this. I've been coming here all these years trying to get rid of it. But these guys just made me like it more. I might not want to do it with all three of them, but I definitely don't see myself in the missionary position the rest of my life. She laughs again. Your longing is normal and completely under control, Chella. I think if you had confronted your father first, your experience would have ended the way you envisioned, you walking out satisfied and happy. But the two got mixed. The end result, however, is still positive. You went looking for your final answers and you got them. Now it's time to settle down, think about it for a little bit, and make a decision. What decision? I ask. Do you love Smith Baldwin, or were all those conversations we had about him over the past month just some silly crush? I just stare at her. Don't worry, she smiles. I'm not the one who needs to hear that answer. Take your time and think about it. Then, go find him. Give him that present you promised. He's gonna think I'm insane and stupid. He's going to laugh, she said, smiling, and give you a great big hug. Now, let me bring Brick in. He's out of his mind with worry. I stand up as she goes to the door. She doesn't invite him in immediately, but instead closes the door behind her so they can have a preliminary chat. I hope I don't look like shit. I feel like shit, but I really don't want to look like shit. A few seconds later, the door opens. I turn and find Brick closing it behind him. I'm sorry, I say before he even says hello. I'm sorry it ended that way. He smiles at me and takes in a deep breath.
It was your story, Chella. You can have it end any way you want.
Do you hate me for telling Quinn?
Why would I hate you for telling the truth? He says,
and then walks over to me and pulls me into a hug.
I don't hate you. It had to come out. Somehow, someday. He had to know what happened. She came to me late last summer and told me she was pregnant. I was a little stunned. And I don't know if you ever knew this about me, but I went to school with Lucinda. We were in med school together.
You're a doctor?
No, he says. I never finished my residency in psychiatry. I quit and never went back. Smith came into my life like a fucking tornado with all these big ideas about saving the world. I'm not a doctor, but I play amateur when people have issues at the club. I send them all to Lucinda, of course. She's the club psychiatrist, and it's mandatory anyway. I sent Rochelle to her almost 2 years ago when she was thinking about leaving us. I didn't want her to leave. I liked her well enough, and knew Quinn liked her a lot. I just wanted to keep things the same. I'm a man of habit. And then I came along and fucked it up. No, he says, you didn't. And I'm relieved, actually. Now Quinn and I can figure it out together, like we should have last summer.
Is he talking to you?
No, Brick laughs, but he will. Eventually. Friendships can endure a lot, even this, I hope.
And Smith? I ask.
He's gonna give you the space you need.
Did you order him to do that?
I don't give Smith Baldwin orders, Chella.
He laughs.
It was his idea. And don't jump to conclusions and think that he wants to walk away. Just take your time and then go find him.
Chapter 41. Smith. What's up? I ask Brick as he comes into my bar in the club. I told him, begged him, to go after Chella. I promised him I would not, if he did. He and Lucinda are still good friends. I'm hoping he has something to tell me, and I want to ask him how it went, but I'm afraid. I can't even look him in the eyes. I just got back from Chella's house. I have to look up for this. And? Brick lets out a deep breath. She's been seeing Lucinda for 7 years. Why? It's complicated, and I don't know the whole story, but I'm gonna assume it was based on the sexual guilt and sense of shame that her mother instilled in her as a child and growing up. I look back down at my hands. I want to kill that man. I keep hearing Chella's words in my head. What they did to her? What almost happened to her? Lucinda didn't tell me everything, but she did say this was the final stage in Chella letting go of it. I think that outburst on the street was something of a catharsis. I think about our dinner with her father, how she reacted or didn't react to all those nasty things he said. How she just took it, then closed herself off to be sad alone, then pretended it never happened the next day. I think about the nightmares and the sleepwalking, how it's probably all connected. And then I just hate myself for not seeing her more clearly. We talked, Brick continues. She's feeling better. Does she hate me? I look up at him again. For bringing her into this game? No, he says. I'm pretty sure it was her idea. Like I said, Lucinda can't tell me everything, but she hinted that Rochelle and Chella set this up together. First, so Rochelle could leave and have someone take her place, probably for Quinn's sake. And second, I think this was Chella's fantasy. I didn't get the feeling she was coerced. She came on her own, and stayed on her own too, Smith. I don't know what to do, I admit. I'm always the cool one, you know? The guy in control, the guy with everything figured out. And here I am, so fucking lost. I don't even have a house, I say, looking up again. What? Brick asks, his brow furrowed. A house or a job. I'm playing by all these rules, you know? Rules I just make up whenever things go wrong so I can try to find a logical way past the problem instead of dealing with it. You do good things, Smith. Don't ever think you don't. But I'm not sure about that. Money, yeah, I have a lot of it, and I give it all away. It felt good for years to do that, to have that kind of power over people, corporations. But now it just feels very self-righteous, self-indulgent, if I'm being honest. I think I'm going about this all wrong, I say, standing up. How do you figure? Brick asks. But I don't answer. I just walk out. I need to rethink things. Everything.
Chapter 42, Quinn. Rochelle? I say into the phone after the beep. She still has voicemail picking up this number, so I'm hoping it's still one she checks. I'm sorry, I just found out about the abortion, and I'm so fucking sorry. I wish I would have been there for you, I don't know what else to say. What can I say? How the hell do you fix something like this? I just want to see you again. I'd beg if I thought it would do me any good, but I know you better. You told me once that everyone thinks you're flighty and stupid because you're easygoing, but you're really very decisive, and once you make up your mind and commit to something, you stick it out no matter what. I guess that's why we lasted so long. She was just trying to stick it out. She did, after all, go to Brick with her problem, not me. Not me. But I just want you to know, Beep. The voicemail box you're trying to reach is full. I just look at the phone. Really? This is how it ends? Really? I throw it across the room and yell.
Chapter 43. Cella. I sit out on my back courtyard on New Year's Eve, my hands tucked into my coat pockets, and watch the snow falling down. It's so thick, it looks like a curtain. I came home yesterday and found this here, sitting out in the middle of the snow, covered in flakes, like it's always been there. The two ballet children from Matisse's exhibit. There was a note attached from Smith. Dear Cella, I think this is a better Christmas present for you. I never had the childhood I imagined either, but it was perfect compared to yours. So when you look at this sculpture, think of better times. Think of us. Love, Smith. I'm not sure what to think about it, to be honest. I love the sculpture, a lot. I check my watch and it's 3 minutes till midnight. 3 minutes and another year is over. But the gift just isn't enough for me anymore. I have been considering my options all week, and I finally called Brick last night to help me make a decision. So I sent Smith a note back this morning. I smile, thinking about my note. And then I laugh. Hey, Smith says from behind me. I turn my head to find him standing in my patio doorway, half in, half out of the house. Hey, I say back. I got your note, he says, holding up the linen napkin from the club. And I have to say, Marcella Walcott, you have made me very curious. Again. I nod, trying to stop my smile. But then, why should I? He's here, and that makes me happy. I've figured out what I wanted to put in the box. He holds the napkin up. I know, you said this in the note.
He steps out into the courtyard. He's wearing a dark winter coat and a nice suit. His $1,000 shoes drop 6 inches into the snow, but he doesn't seem to mind.
Is that it?
He asks, motioning to the blue Tiffany box I pick up off a table.
You only get one anything present, Chella. I hope it's really what you want.
It is, I say, waiting for him to join me on the bench. I cleared off a spot for him when I came out here 20 minutes ago, but snow is already piling up. He doesn't care about that either. He just sits down.
Do you like it?
He asks, pointing to the sculpture. You know I do, but I like this present better, I say, shaking the box.
Are you going to tell me what it is?
Eventually, I say, but then I pull another box out of my coat pocket. This one is long and thin, about the size of an envelope. But I need to give you your present first. You gave me 2 already, and I never even gave you 1.
I don't need presents, he says, wrapping his warm hand around my cold one.
Right, I know that, but I think you're wrong, and I think you gave me a hint that very first night we became friends.
Friends?
He raises one eyebrow. Lovers? I ask back.
Both?
He says. We laugh. Open it, I say, handing him the box. His box is white with a black ribbon. I will never see black and white quite the same way after my experience at the club, but it reminds me of happiness, of all the things that made a difference to me. 1 month, that's all I had with them. Just 1 month, and it was enough to change me forever.
You know, people have been giving me daily presents for more than a decade. Shoes, and a place to crash, a car to drive me around.
Those are all good gifts, Smith, I say, squeezing his hand. But a present is something different. A present is something you don't need, but want. So open it. I catch him grinning that one-sided dimpled smile as he reaches for the white ribbon and pulls the bow apart. He lifts the lid off the box and stares at what's inside.
What?
He laughs. I took a big risk with this. Don't laugh.
What is this?
He says, taking the papers out of the envelope to hold them up to the light.
We're going to Finland?
I like the way you say we, Mr. Baldwin. He looks through the itinerary.
What did you do?
He asks, shaking his head. Your dream, remember? That first night? A puppy and a trip to the Arctic to see the northern lights. We have to wait on the puppy. I didn't think it was fair to choose your puppy for you.
We?
I bite my lip and smile as I pick up my box and take the lid off. He looks inside and laughs. Loud. He holds up the linen napkin and reads it.
Us.
I put us in the box, Mr. Baldwin. So if you really want to be true to your word, you will get on that plane with me tomorrow afternoon, and 15 hours later, we'll be lounging on a big bed in a glass igloo somewhere near Helsinki, in a town I can't pronounce or spell, looking up at the northern lights. Or, at least one of us will. I guess it depends on who takes the bottom. He shakes his head, smiling so big, I see a whole different person underneath. I already told Lucinda I'm not a missionary kind of girl, so...
Hey,
he says, his fingers coming up to take my face and turn it towards him. He kisses me, soft and sweet.
There's always reverse cowgirl.
I missed you this week, I whisper in his mouth.
I won't let it happen again. From now on, I get you every night, every day, and every night.
Which brings me back to the other thing I put in the box.
There's more? He asks. Are you getting greedy, Miss Walcott?
Yes, I say, kissing him again. So very, very greedy. I think we need more greed in our lives, Smith Baldwin. I think we're done giving to others for a little bit. 9 days and 10 nights, to be exact. So let's throw caution to the wind. I reach into the box, pull out a little notebook, and hold it up.
The rules, he says, reading the cover. You have rules?
Mm-hmm, I say. Open it up and read them. He opens it and chuckles. There are no rules. That's right, I say. There are no rules.
Epilogue. Brick. The year has flown by, and today is the first day of my summer vacation. We close the club for the summer. Starting June 1st, I am a free man until the Labor Day weekend party. I like June 1st. It's empty here. Everything is covered with white sheets to keep the dust at bay, and the only bar with booze is Smith's, which really isn't Smith's anymore since he moved out in January. Every once in a while, he brings Chella to the White Room for dinner, but only Monday through Thursday. He's not even a member anymore, so it's public days only for them. The club phone rings down at the valet station. I ignore it and take another sip of brandy. I'm heading to the airport in about 20 minutes. A long trip around the world. 10 countries, 2 full months of travel. And a new girl I found a few months ago. She's nothing special, they never are. But everyone needs company when they go out in public. The ringing stops and I lean back in my chair, going through the year in my head. It's been a good year so far. Quinn doesn't talk to me much, but he's still a member. We decided not to get another girl since Smith was out. The threesome thing, it's just not the same as a quad. Besides, he's still pretty pissed at me. We looked for Rochelle, but there was no trace. And I did my best with Lucinda. Either she doesn't know where she went, or she's never saying. They're traveling too, so Quinn and I decided to drop it until Lucinda gets back in September. Maybe we'll give it another try then. Maybe we won't. I'm hoping for won't. I finish my drink and set the glass in the sink, then hop down the stairs to the front of the lobby so I can turn around and look up. I always do this before I leave for the summer. I love this club. The phone rings again, and since I'm standing near the valet desk, I reach over and pick it up. Turning point, how can I help you? Silence. Hello? I ask. There's a shuffling noise, and then some heavy breathing. Okay, perverts, give it a rest, will ya? You're creeping out my waitstaff. We've been getting these prank calls for weeks now, and I'm tired of it. I'm just about to hang up when I hear a voice. Brick? I bring the phone back to my ear. Rochelle? Silence. Rochelle, is that you? And then I hear a baby cry. Rochelle, I ask, more insistent. Rochelle, talk to me. Is that you? Are you okay? I'm sorry, she says. The baby cries again and she makes a little shushing sound. Just tell him I'm sorry. And then the line goes dead.
You have been listening to Taking Turns, Book One of the Turning Series, produced by Greg Lawrence. Associate Producer, Emily Durr. Text copyright 2017 by J.A. Huss. Production copyright 2017 by Podium Publishing. All rights reserved. If you enjoyed this audiobook, let us know. Take a quick moment to rate and review it on Audible so we know we're bringing you audiobooks you'll love.
End of Bookshit. Welcome to the End of Bookshit. I write these in place of an author's note at the end of each book, just to let out my thoughts about the story. Sometimes I really have a lot to say. Sometimes I'm worried about certain topics in the book, and I feel the need to write about them. But oddly, I have nothing controversial to say about this menage thing at all. I really don't think this book is all that controversial. It's just a love story. I tried telling this to Jana Aston. She likes straight contemporary romances, and, as you know, I don't really write those. But I thought I had in this one, I really did. Until she read it and messaged me something along the lines of, "What the fuckity fuck fuck was that?" I was like, "What? What's wrong?" That wasn't a straight love story. My mind is spinning. I'm paraphrasing. Let me just get a screenshot of this message stream. Please hold. Okay, I forgot that most of the conversation happened on the phone. In the paperback version of the EOBS, I use the screenshots. It's 100% different and you can read them. It's fucking funny. I don't think this book is that twisted, like at all. I think this book is probably more contemporary romance than anything I've written. So it has a quad menage. There were no guns, people, not even a mention. Wait, I take it back. Fucking Chella had to go and pull a gun on Smith when he broke into her house. Damn it. I really thought I left the guns out this time. But no one died, so ha. And the mother 3 years ago doesn't count, so there. This is the J.A. Huss version of contemporary romance. The weirdest thing about the story is where it came from. Straight out of the Forbidden City episode in Seinfeld. That's right, people. You see how contemporary this romance is? Came from Seinfeld. Well, the concept did. Underground sex club. For some reason in my head, it was set in Montreal, and that's why I have all these French names. But I've only been there once, and the thought of trying to do research on a city, a French-speaking one at that, was just a big no. Write what you know, and I know Denver. So yeah. I remember back in like 2014, someone wrote a review, and it said something like, I had no idea Denver was such a hotspot for erotic modeling. It was snarky, and she was making fun of me, I think. But I thought it was funny. So that's how this started. Just your everyday underground Forbidden City sex club. That was a while ago. I got this idea like 2 years ago, and I've been thinking about it ever since. Trying to piece it together and have it make sense for each of the characters. Trying to flesh out the world inside Turning Point Club. By the time I actually sat down to write it, I started this book on December 5th and finished it on December 31st. Everything had changed. I didn't want a seedy underground club. I wanted something stable and luxurious and filled with people from the Great Gatsby, minus the killing, mind you. And I wanted it to be highly structured. The idea for the game came long after the rules, which is kind of funny. The rules came from the premise of how each man would fill a need for Chella. Quinn was the easygoing friends with benefits. Brick was a date for public events and parties. And Smith was the one she'd fall in love with. It's just a peek. That was the very first thing I wrote for the series. I built the whole story around a girl who liked the dark side a little more than she was comfortable with and had a lot of bottled up shame. And I'm really happy with the characters. I think if we're going to do something like this, you couldn't find a better trio of men to take care of you than Quinn, Brick, and Smith. Rochelle was a huge part of the initial story, and it always started with her missing and Chella taking her place in bed. I wanted to keep Rochelle a part of the story too, because I always knew she'd have to face the music eventually, and that's book two. It's called Turning Back, and now that you've read the end of Taking Turns, I'm sure you can see where this is headed. There will probably be four books in the series, but each story is its own, especially the last one. That book is probably more like a spin-off because Turning Point Club kind of intrigues me. So many, many possibilities for stories in that place. The next book coming in 2017 is Anarchy Missing, and it's weird because I came up with the concept for that series around the same time as Turning series. Only Anarchy is all about having sex with supervillains. Well, falling in love with them too, so that's going to come out next. If you haven't read 3-2-1 yet, I recommend you pick that up as soon as possible. It's a lot like this book, and nothing at all like this book. And if you enjoy Taking Turns, please consider leaving me a review where you purchased it. I'd really appreciate that. And you don't have to write anything earth-shattering. Just a few lines with your thoughts is just fine. One more thing. If you'd like to chat with me on Facebook, I have a private fan group called Shrike Bikes. Just ask to join, and one of us will approve you as soon as we see it. I'm in that group chatting with readers every day, every single day. Every question gets answered. Plus, I post a lot of giveaways, and that's the best place to find the order forms for signed books. Okay, thanks for reading, thanks for reviewing, and I'll see you in the next book. Julie.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.